As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
All right, everybody, listen up. We know it's hot out there. The weather's been tough. But training camp is all about keeping that intensity up, keeping that energy up. A little chippiness is all right.
What's going on?
My microphone.
Hey, why don't you just back off?
Hey.
Why don't you let them in?
Guys, listen, we gotta intro the show so we can start the show.
First.
Keep your... Whoa, Seth, no swinging.
My time to talk.
Keep your hands to yourself.
My time to talk.
Nothing wrong with a little chippiness to get training camp going, both on the field and right here on Time's Ours. Hi, we're three professional actors, Joshua Briscoe, Seth Kaiser, and Nate Taylor. You were swept away into a beautiful world of our own creation. None of us are Screen Actors Guild members, pay the actors and writers, but we're not. That was just a fun little bit, and really maybe us trying out. Are we scabs right now? Did we just cross the picket line by accident? Because that might be the best drama that anybody gets to hear created in a while, and I think that was, you know... Oscar material if we were supporting those, which we're not right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know that if a check somehow comes to my door that is not $0 and 0 cents, I will pay back. I will refuse to sign and get that check cashed, okay? Because y'all, we gonna be hurting next March. Like, hurting, I tell you, hurting for... dramatic, comedic content. It was really sad seeing that big check for $0 and 0 cents. And you're like, that's right. That's why they on strike.
You know,
did you really just print me a check? And mail it to me?
That cost you money.
For no money? Yeah. I can't go back. No. You want your little sci-fi? Nah, not right now. No.
I'm actually going to be sitting kind of pretty because, and I thought you guys would be excited to hear this, I have recently started watching Ted Lasso.
Hey!
Oh, no kidding!
With myself and Jazz. Yeah, we're 4 or 5 episodes in, and I'm enjoying it. I did fall asleep during last night's episode, but that was not the show's fault. That was me being very tired. So I'm excited. It hasn't hit, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Better Off Ted levels for me, but we'll see how it goes. I'm excited.
I'm excited anytime you start consuming secular media.
is that what I think?
I'm not a Mennonite. Like,
is that what I think that is, Josh?
Oh, man. You know, yeah.
Hey, not that there's anything wrong with Mennonites.
Hey, why don't you reach out to him? Let's see if he want to give a speech.
What's the old joke about, like, the Amish? It's like, well, I'll make fun of the Amish because, you know, they're never going to hear it. So, like, That's one of my favorite.
This man says secular media into a secular media microphone. Incredible! Incredible.
It's nice to see you've emerged from your yurt, Mr. Kaiser. Yeah. to talk to us about some of the football.
Shout out to Harold Coots from Fox 4, who was like, just FYI, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know yet, Harrison Butker, 2-time world champion, devout man of faith, or man of faith, I should say, obviously gave the commencement speech at Georgia Tech over the spring. He said those things into a secular microphone. And then Harold was like, did this man just tell me he's not a public speaker, even though he gave a commencement speech and talked beautifully to us for 11 minutes? And I was like, yeah, that's what he said. He's so humble. So humble, so driven. If anybody can explain their job the way Harrison Butker explains all the elements that it takes to be a successful NFL kicker, you, sir or ma'am, are doing your job excellent. I don't care what the bosses say, but if you can do it to the degree that Harrison Butker, whenever he is in front of a secular microphone, does tell you how his approach is changing, how the flight of the ball is changing, what he eats, the fact that he trained less this offseason because of the injury, because he's now more motivated, because he took more time off from kicking a ball all day, every day. The idea that he now has a greater appreciation because his son is able to kick with him when they go out to the practice fields. And again, Harrison Butker has been amazing so far into training camp. I also gave him the affirmation he was clearly wanting when he was like, I think every day in practice I've been kicking against the wind. And I was like, that's funny. And you still putting it through them uprights, ain't you now? So look, for all the things Harrison Butker has done, he has continued to remain consistent. And I just want to remind everybody, secular microphones are okay. Like, they're not as bad as they seem. And I just want to remind you that I'm also weirdly in an epiphany realizing that I too am talking to a secular microphone.
I'd like to think that any microphone isn't secular if I'm the one talking into it. I'm like, I am the burning coal from my sand. I'm sorry, I can't even get into that. I'm sorry.
Well,
we were about to go into a deep cut there.
Yeah, I didn't want to say, is holy water out here giving your mic different mic levels?
Yep, I keep it in a super soaker next to my desk. just in case I need to freshen up. I'm glad you mentioned the fights, though, Josh, because that has been one of my favorite parts of training camp so far. Although, can I do a PSA on two things?
Yeah, but you say that's my favorite part so far. Makes you just sound like the president of the Jack Cochran Haters Club.
I really did. That's my favorite part. There's many other things I've liked about training camp. Two things. First, Travis Kelce. Sir, you do whatever you want. I mean, you know, backup shouldn't be grabbing the ball in you after the play is over. Please don't, with your borderline priceless hands, punch someone with a helmet on. I saw that, and that was the thing that made me mad. Not that he punched him. Like, I mean, yeah, he probably shouldn't hit people, but it's like, no, Travis, your hands! Like, I mean, that freaked me out. And that actually could be for anyone, not just Travis. That's for anyone. Don't punch someone in the helmet. That will not accomplish what you think it will. Like, punching someone in the head is a great way to break a hand regardless. When they're wearing a helmet, that's just, please don't do that. The second thing, I want Patrick Mahomes to be the fight breaker upper of every fight in the world, because I watched him get between Watson and I don't remember who the other guy was.
Smith Marset?
Yeah,
I pulled that out of the air. Is that right?
Yeah,
Watching them, you know, when he got between them at first, they were doing the typical, you know how guys get when someone gets between them, they get even more rambunctious. And you see the exact moment they both realize, oh, that's Pat. Like, and they knew, seriously, if Pat got so much as a hangnail from that. And I mean, and Watson played some snaps last year, and it would not matter. Like, you heard the franchise? Are you Travis Kelce? No? Okay, we've gone through the checklist.
I love the idea that it's like that scene in Sorry to Bother You, where it's just like all of a sudden Patrick Mahomes steps into the middle of these two dudes just mother bleeping each other, and all of a sudden it's like, I hope you have a fantastic day. You smell great. Like, just it suddenly turns into a very machismo compliment fest, because the first time that Patrick Mahomes gets hit with one after the whistle, you're right, it's over. It's just like, all right, yep. Sorry. Hey, Trey Smith, we love you're great. You are a starting guard on this team. That's really important. But
yeah, what I was trying to say to you, it reminded me also of, and I haven't watched all of the show. I've only watched like a couple seasons of it. Peaky Blinders. There's a scene there where there's like these guys are fighting, and one of them happens to be like this really well-known mobster's son, basically. Uh-huh. And the one guy starts yelling, "That's Bully Shelby's son. Are you suicidal?" And like everyone just stops. Like, I didn't know. I'm really sorry. And it was like that exact moment. Like, you just know someone in the background is like, "That's Patrick Mahomes. Are you suicidal, mate?" Like, just don't even push back.
I just can't believe how hard you're showing off for the Gentiles in the audience right now. I mean, Peaky Blinders too?
I had to stop watching it.
See, this is where it is. I know. Here's the other thing on. Nate, go ahead.
I just want to say this, Seth. Keep at it with the Ted Lasso. The hill that I'm willing to fight on is that episode 3 of the first season when it's, and obviously this hits home for me because it's, you know, my profession in a sense, but when
were you again, Seth? What how far in are you?
I think we're through episode 5 or 6.
Okay.
It's when Trent Krim is at the restaurant with Ted Lasso, where I actually realized, oh, this is going to be one of the best shows in television. Yeah. And to know that he spent the whole day just like, and I mean, in essence, that third episode is a smaller way of just explaining the entire first season. I love the third episode. I believe it's the episode where Roy is like reading about himself through fictional characters to his lovely yep. niece. And yeah, it's just, and the way they end it, where you can just, you can just see he's going to trick all of them. And it's like, yeah, that's the beauty of the show.
But I think it's making me a more optimistic person.
Yes. Like, yes.
Like, it's kind of like, there are great. A few shows.
Yeah.
There are a few shows, like watching Phil Dunphy on Modern Family. It's like, you know what? I need to support my kids more. Like, just like go along with some stuff. And then watching Coach Taylor do literally anything on Friday Night Lights. It's like, I need to be a better husband, father, and man.
How does he do it?
How does he do it?
How does he?
How did that man get a state championship and almost another one with Matt Saracen, who I love? I would take a bullet for Matt Saracen. But how did he do it? It's hard to say.
The way it is read to Rebecca, and then Rebecca realizes.
Oh. Yep.
It's perfect.
It really is good.
It's really perfect. So yeah, keep watching. And I wish I could tell you that there's optimism at Chiefs training camp, but we not even halfway through, Seth.
There's no optimism in Nate's life right now. There's only optimism that he is going to. Maybe they will install one of those super fast trains between Kansas City and St. Joe's.
Dude, do you know how life-changing that would be? I have not been in St. Joe this year. And look, people who make like a trip out there and you obviously are like attending and making a day of it, it is one of the best experiences in football. Please don't let us tired rundown media folk dampen it. It is a legitimately incredible one-of-one experience that most other fan bases don't even have the ability
Correct.
To do because the Chiefs are playing in a college campus.
Yep.
But when you drive to St. Joe every day for a while, and again, I haven't done this year, and I feel for you, Nate. Those are some hard highway miles.
I just know where every mile is on I-29 between St. Joseph and Overland Park.
That makes sense because you pass the rolling hills and then the beautiful mountains and then there's that gorgeous creek. It's like Lake Tahoe between there, right?
Sure. And the good thing I will say is that most people are driving really well so far. You know, it's been fun to actually drive by fans in the mornings because, like, I would like to be on time. But yeah, it's been great. People have already said hello. The next time the team practices is on Wednesday, so that's August 2nd. I got Ben Williams and Michael Reed down. I gotta find them or obviously say hello to them. But hey, we saw Clint earlier. You know, that was great.
I miss getting to meet people at camp. That does bum me out.
It's great. Yeah, you know, it's great. But no, like, even talking to parents who's like, hey, my kid is going to be one of the guys, my kid's going to be one of the children that are get to, you know, carry the helmet up the hill with an NFL player. And I'm just like, I hope it's Trey Smith. Because
I hope you got a strong kid.
I just shook his hand yesterday and I was like, yeah, what in the world was I ever thinking I was going to make it to this league? Like, that's, why did no one tell me this at 7? They're like, no.
Sir, no.
And of
hey,
course.
Hey, kids, don't watch Deuce Vaughn. That's not good for you. It's okay.
Yeah, that's a narcotic that I don't know if the hit on the return is going to be the same. But no, it's like, hey, you know, do you know who your son's going to get to walk with? And they're like, no, it's just going to be kind of at random. And yeah, you're going to make eye contact with an NFL player and you can ask him anything and he'll probably give you an answer because he's exhausted. so you know, autograph, anything, man. But yeah, it's a cool experience, but going there each day because I'm trying to be a good father and husband, or a good husband and father, depending on how you look at it. It's been enjoyable because, again, we are not halfway through this, y'all. I think the last day of camp is August 17th, so there are plenty of days still available, which is what I mostly get the sense from Travis Kelce. It's like, man, we're not even halfway through this. Why are you punching me? Are you the question I have to ask you, DiCaprio Boodle, is, well, two questions. B, A, do you want to make the roster? And B, do you want to win games this year? Because why are you punching me? Like, and of course, to your point, Seth, it's amazing that Andy Reid, one of the most old school, hard, you know what, coaches in the league, lets his Hall of Fame tight end essentially get away with anything. Hey, are you concerned, Andy? No. Okay.
I wanted to like get your view of this like in the tent, Nate, because like day one, Andy Reid's like, you know, no, some chirping. These guys are talking. They're working hard. It's hot out here. You know, I love to see it. Love the intensity. As long as no punches get thrown. And then, like, not literally, but it felt like 45 minutes later and maybe 48 hours later, Travis Kelce throws a punch. I'm not saying he should get cut for it. I'm just saying that scuffle escalated into a scuffle plus one. And then it wasn't much beyond that. Fine. I mean, I do think Travis Kelce deserves, of course, the credit that he has earned. And also, like, hey, man, I know I had a reputation coming out of college, and I'm not that guy anymore. The funniest thing to me is that the headlines could just as easily read, like, Saturday Night Live host gets in fight at work, punches a coworker. Like, that would have been funny. But, I, like, what is the vibe this year there in that way, Nate, in particular? Because you can read about this in theathletic.com if you'd like more from Nathaniel Taylor. But what's real there? What's really Andy Reid saying, bleep it? And what is he actually kind of like grimacing through a little bit? Help me decode that, because I genuinely do not know what the answer is.
Yeah, and it'd be fascinating to get your guys' opinion on it, because I'm actually shocked that Andy's okay with this. But, you know, whether it's Steve Spagnuolo or Dave Tobe, who we've talked to over the last couple of days, they've made it very clear that, like, Andy knows exactly when to say what absolutely needs to be said, and he knows exactly when to kind of let the players govern themselves, during a training camp, in particular one that's longer than usual, which is this case. So Andy knows that we are going to ask him about, like, his tight end punching defensive teammates, dudes who might not make the roster, which is also just wild. And Andy, you know, made the choice to say that, you know, Travis put something out on Twitter saying, I got to be a better leader. As Matt Derrick told me today, guys, if you look at the tweet, Travis Kelce didn't ever say he was wrong. He just said, I got to be a better leader, which means maybe I got to hit him with the words, not the actual fist.
Maybe next time I need to connect better. There's a lot of way of leading. And now I'm not saying he should, by the way. I'm not condoning violence.
Right, right.
I do wonder, it's like, man, you're like the seventh corner on the roster. Could you not to, you know, the second most important player in arguably the league?
I'll just leave it there. Coach, but for Andy, coach's point has basically been, look, there's a time where we need to be teaching and there's a time where we need to be ultra competitive. And I'd much rather, at least for this year's team, he would much rather have to pull them back versus try to pump them up. And so I thought it was really telling that Joshua Williams said, the thing that Andy has told us over and over and over again is we have to have edge. We have to be ultra competitive because they know, at least for the veterans who are a part of the 2019 and the 2020 experience, like Travis Kelce, they know that they're being chased. They're being hunted. And it's going to be a really long marathon to see if they can either keep pace or continue to stay ahead of the league, whether it's the Detroit Lions on September 7th or the AFC's contenders throughout the course of the regular season and the postseason. So last year, it was a lot about have the young guys come along, like the young guys listen. Like, really listen. We're going to give you a lot of reps. We're going to give you a lot of chances to make a lot of mistakes so that hopefully you'll be ready in September. And then, hey, for all the veterans and all the old guys, just trust the coaching staff. Trust the player personnel staff as to why these guys are here. And then coach telling Patrick, hey, you need to be just as involved as I am to bring the team together. Well, this team is obviously won a Super Bowl. They have a few newcomers, but not as many as last year. And so they want to be able to dominate from the start. And the way they're going about it this year is really unprecedented in the amount of time that I've covered this team, where training camp is really all football all the time, but in such a manner that it's very meticulous, which usually leaves fighting, you know, scuffles, even shoving. Like, I've gone through whole training camps where dudes don't even shove one another, let alone like try to take each other's helmets off or try to swing a punch or whatever. But one way to increase the intensity, I guess, from the defensive coaching staff is we need to create more turnovers, which means we all need to get a lot better at punching the ball out. And sadly, Peanut Tillman is not here. So keep punching and see if you can work on your jab a little bit better when a player's either coming across the middle or the player has, you know, or your teammate has secured the pass on a jump ball. You can still punch him, you know, but try to hit the ball. And it's really the offensive player's mindset to fight through that. And so it's, in some ways, it's a bit more physical. Last year, I believe Andy, on the first day of full pads, did not let guys really go to the ground. By day two, they were doing full-on tackling this past week. So they've ratcheted it up in a way that is unusual compared to camps in the past. I don't know if that's a good thing. I guess my question for you guys is that actually a good thing, considering that there are more guys hurt right now than there were last year?
What do you think, Seth?
I think that Nate's last point is absolutely correct.
No, no, yeah, no, go. No, no, I'm not coming for you on this one. Go ahead. You have no thoughts? You want to talk about the fighting? And then I say, Seth, what do you think? And you have no thoughts?
Okay. No, I'm sorry. I thought you were so, doing a bit.
So, okay. Nate, let me ask you a question. No, when we were talking earlier about like how people leave Ted Lasso thinking like, I should be more optimistic, or you watch other shows, like I need to be a better like husband and father, or what do you think people come away with when they listen to Time's Ours? Do you think, I really need to be a better listener? Because that's what I think.
I was listening, sort of. No, I really was listening, and then I thought you were doing a bit with me there. So in terms of the fighting.
I asked you a question, and then I muted my mic because I'm trying to scare these bleeping squirrels off of this bird feeder out my window. They have completely drained this sucker. And I thought, well, Seth will talk for a while here. And then I'll have time to knock on the window pane.
I just completely let you down. I actually do have some thoughts on that.
Well, that's too bad because we're going to talk about Nate. You know what, Nate? I've been dying. I still have a sticky note that says, Nate Pod. McDuffie, Breland Speaks. So I wrote that Breland Speaks story you wrote like 6 months ago was fabulous, and I really did want to talk about it on this podcast, and suddenly I'm thinking we have a great opportunity to do it right here. You got to try out somewhere, right?
He had a tryout with the Houston Texans. I'm fascinated. You know, if you play it a certain way, all that matters, I think, for Breland Speaks is if he can be on an NFL roster by like the second preseason game. So he's still got 2 weeks to figure out where he wants to go. But yeah, he was you could argue the best pass rusher in the USFL. And I thought it was fascinating that he chose to play with the number 57, which is what he was known with the Kansas City Chiefs. It didn't work out. You know, following up with guys, you know, 4 or 5 years after their NFL rookie season is always so telling, because not only does a person grow, but they continue to sort of self-examine.
Mm-hmm.
And Breland was at a point where he was willing to share with me quite a bit about why he was not successful with the Chiefs, how the Chiefs, he felt, did a lot to support him. And for a multitude of reasons, he just didn't make the best of his opportunity, in particular that second season. In particular after he got hurt in preseason of his second year, and then his career sort of... Had a real, it's just wild to know that, like, you know, a player can go through a real hiatus, even at this high a level. And I think as I talk about Breland Speaks, it does remind me about Justin Ross, because Justin Ross is going through a miniature version of what Breland Speaks is going through. But, you know, Justin Ross is in the NFL, which obviously is the highest of the highest competition. Breland Speaks has, I believe, earned the right to be on an NFL roster and get a chance to make an NFL 53-man roster if he gets a chance to play in the preseason, given what he's done in the USFL. For Trent McDuffie, it's always great when you can spend an entire offseason, especially after you know the team, whatever the team's outcome is, like, hey, all these rookies are going to go to the Super Bowl. And then it's like, okay, well, now they're champions. And it's one of the most, like, remarkable rookie classes in the franchise's history. And so, basically, from about the combine on, I spent the entire offseason working on trying to explain how the Chiefs kind of lucked themselves into getting Trent McDuffie in a trade that is not of the magnitude as Patrick Mahomes, but it is the most recent trade that illustrates if you make the right moves on draft day, if you do enough research, if you do enough scouting, even if you don't think the player is going to be available to you, there might be a fortuitous opportunity. And so the fact that Brett Veach has two of these trades on his resume in less than a decade is pretty striking. The fact that, you know, he was the galvanizing force to convince Andy Reid and John Dorsey to go after Patrick Mahomes, and then, of course, to be able to see how the entire sequence was going to go up and get Trent McDuffie, using the Miami Dolphins pick to jump over the Buffalo Bills on behalf of the New England Patriots. I will never forget that, how the interdivisional play actually helped the Chiefs land Trent McDuffie. And I'll say this right now, their best cornerback on the roster from a talent, skill position placement, and the fact that he's this good already, and he has so much farther to grow because he is covering the hell out of these dudes. And Pat's like, isn't that cute? Perfect pass.
It has to be so annoying.
Dime piece. In the bucket. Like, how you want it this time? Sidearm? Trent McDuffie is our best corner. And people might not be ready to acknowledge that or believe that, but
he was at the end of last season.
Going into year two. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, what was that, Mr. Kaiser?
He was at the end of last season too. And I like L'Jarius Sneed. But by the time the playoffs hit, Trent was the better corner.
Yep. The Eagles,
look at this little bird that found his voice. Oh, yeah.
The Eagles tried Trent McDuffie once in the second half and was like, why would we do that?
Yeah.
Let me say real quick, first of all, listen close if you can hear this. That was me peeling off the sticky note that has said Nate Pod, McDuffie, Breland speaks for like 2 months. So I'm gonna go ahead and discard that. Secondarily, if you've not read those stories, you might just Google like Nate Taylor Breland speaks, Nate Taylor Trent McDuffie. That might get you there quicker than just scrolling down Nate's author page because he's written so much in the time since then. And yes, Seth, who apparently does want to have the talking stick back again, also had a film review about Trent McDuffie, looking back on his rookie year, which was obviously super fragmented because of the injury and all. But Seth, if you want to talk about Trent McDuffie, you're so invited to. If you want to talk about the energy level at camp and the fighting, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And the floor is yours, Seth.
I think that the energy level at, you know, the fighting and stuff at camp, as long as it doesn't actually bleed over, you know, I think it's fine. That it's nice to see people fired up. I do think that it is interesting, the idea of when you got guys that come in and win a Super Bowl as a rookie and contribute at all. It might just be kind of an interesting difference in how they view the league and how they view themselves, as opposed to someone who, like, say, Travis Kelce was, you know, he was hurt his first year and then he was very, very good his, you know, coming in immediately. He was great and then he was awesome and all that. But he had to suffer through a lot of stuff. I'm just curious because the Chiefs are like in a new phase now, right? This new generation of Chiefs players didn't maybe have to struggle quite the same way that some guys that have been around a little longer have. And like, I mean, even Mahomes, you know, I mean, he went through some stuff and he didn't start his first year. And then that second year, you have that, you know, the offsides game and stuff. I am curious to see if a little bit of extra chippiness comes from that. Because I know if I came into the league and was part of a team that won the Super Bowl right away, it might be easy to become a little more like, hey, I'm part of this too, Travis. And it's like, yo, Boodle, come on, man. Like, don't make me say it out loud. Like, you know, and so I'm just curious because one thing I have noticed is it's been Boodle a couple of times. That's why I'm picking on him a little. I'm sure he's a good teammate. But like, if you're the one in the middle of the fight multiple times, it's like, maybe assume you might be the problem. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's good that they're really competitive. Trent McDuffie was by the end of the season especially, he was a better cover corner than Sneed. And I like Sneed as a cover corner. He does have, he's a good athlete, Sneed now. He's a good athlete with a good combination of speed and quickness, but he's a little bit stiff. In terms of when he's moving backward and when he's transitioning. So he can't quite go in and out the same way that McDuffie can. He can't change direction quite as well. Now, I'm not saying he's bad at it or even average at it. It's just McDuffie, some of the speed turns that man can make in coverage, where his hips just, it looks like, you remember the action figures that you could like spin the legs all the way around because they were like connected kind of by a string?
Yes.
It looks like that sometimes, like his legs will spin and the rest of his body will stay facing the guy just long enough and then zoop, it'll spin back. And some of the things he'll do in zone coverage, one of my very favorite snaps, I'm looking at it right now, came against, I think it was the Jags, and he manages in zone to take away three different reads. Just one after another, and it's so much fun. And then finally, when Lawrence throws the pass, because he positions himself so well, he's got to lead the ball inside, and Bolton nearly picks it off. And everyone said, "What a play by Bolton!" And I'm like, "Wow! Actually, the receiver had a step, but the ball came inside." I mean, he is He was really good last year. And being really good as a rookie is tough. It's also tough to stack year after year of good cornerback play together.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested in what the three rookies do this year. Because it's hard to be average to above average multiple years in a row as corners. And I know, Josh, you and me back in the good old days of almost entirely sportsing, mm-hmm. we talked about this.
Yes.
Quite a bit. Like you just see those ups and downs. And that's what makes guys like, say, like a Sean Smith to do a little blast from the past. That made him really valuable because he was never a great corner, but he was solid year in and year out. Bashaud Breeland.
I was going to say, does Bashaud Breeland get – I would like Bashaud Breeland to be inducted into the Sean Smith Hall of Fame.
Yes, absolutely. Bashaud Breeland, good every year, like, or at least above average every year.
Charvarius Ward might put a whole career of that together.
Yep, super consistent, and it's hard to do. And so I'm curious with the young guys. I haven't heard a ton about Watson or Williams, except Williams changed his number. A lot of guys changed their numbers.
So did McDuffie, by the way, so you got to get ready for that. He's 22 now.
That is throwing me off. So many, I was like, man, Juan Thornhill is just playing some man. Wait, that ain't right. And I'm like, who is this rookie? Who is it? Oh, nope, that's McDuffie. Dang it. And which, I mean, he looks terrific. All these guys changing numbers, it is freaking me out a little bit. I'm very easily flustered, such as when I'm like appearing on a podcast and shocked that someone would talk to me. Like, oh, you want me to talk? Oh, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. So the thing with McDuffie, I mean, there is a review on him in the Chief Nerd newsletter that really goes into it. I think I charted, I want to say 6 games, including like the playoff stretch, because they faced a bunch of really good receivers.
Yep, that's exactly right.
All anyone remembers from the Super Bowl is that he basically misplayed the ball as it was coming down. He thought with the way Brown's hands moved, because corners play the hands to see when the ball's coming, he thought the ball was coming. So he turned and slowed, and the ball was actually thrown like another 3 or 4 yards deeper. And so he was in position, he just misplayed it. But so that's all anyone remembers from the Super Bowl, but he did some stuff. He's a terrific tackler, terrific blitzer, great in zone, great in man. He really does not have any weaknesses, and he can do all those things that Snead can do in terms of the blitzing, that kind of stuff. Really, with those two guys as the top two corners, I'm really excited for that group. And you can actually, and there's more that was going on here because the pass rush came on, but you can actually divide the Chiefs' defensive season into before McDuffie came back and after McDuffie came back. And you can see a massive difference in their defensive efficiency. Now, again, Spags' defenses always get more efficient down the stretch. And the pass rush really did heat up. But he was a huge part of that, too. And when you add an extra good corner, it's not just the effect of that one spot. Because what that means is you bump your next best corner onto their third best guy. You know what I mean? And it's this domino effect. So McDuffie is a guy I'll talk about all day because he's so good already. And that's like, as a rookie, he was a good to very good corner. And that makes me excited to see what he can do next year or this year. Wow, we're in this year now.
Yeah, we're in
the year.
We're in it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Same deal with Seth's piece here. You go to mnchiefsfan.substack.com. You have to scroll for a little bit because it has been a little while. But a great film review there. Again, Nate's story up in The Athletic along with his Breathe and Speak story. This is us emptying the archives here because I wanted to make sure at some point we talked about that. But now there's, you know, at least practice is happening. So we, if you want more of the required reading, you can follow up there. I want to talk about receivers with you guys yet again. Seth's written about that. And I also, I can't remember how much we talked about Drew Tranquil last week or when Spags talked for the first time. Nate, I know you don't have any understanding of how time currently works because St. Joe is like the water planet in Interstellar where time just moves differently. So I don't know if we've covered this already. If so, we can give it a little bit of a baseline to talk about Tranquil some here today because he spoke at the tent, as did Spags, which is great. Spags pressers just make my day a little bit brighter. But Steve Spagnuolo has now, after the first time, saying he figured that Drew Tranquil would work at all three linebacker spots plus some sub packages. Today, he says, well, yeah, now he's played all three linebacker spots and in sub packages, he noted both with Nick Bolton and essentially in place of Nick Bolton with other guys out there. And then we heard from Tranquil as well. Last time, Spag said it's like he's been here for 3 years already, which sounded like the happiest I've ever heard Steve Spagnuolo with a smile on his face. As he must have said that. What a compliment to give. But Nate, what did you make of all of that? And one other thing from that I thought was interesting, just kind of in the whole linebacker conversation, Spags did say, you know, he's good enough. He could be a starter somewhere, but we got three really good players in our base right now. I'm paraphrasing, but he was saying we got three good starters now, which is implicitly penciling in Leo Chanel there. I don't know how real that is or how much that's just him being kind of the incumbent. But I'm really interested to hear what you've seen from that group. And Seth, we've had some short but interesting conversations about Tranquil that I think a bunch of this is going to come home to roost if I had to guess. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I'm going to write about Drew probably later this week. I got to be honest with you guys. I can see why Steve Spagnuolo's fallen in love with this man. Not only has he picked up the system, but he's making better reads throughout camp. You know, he missed the first 2 days of pads because of a neck injury. He came back yesterday on Sunday and did pretty well in some of the team periods. You know, they kind of eased him back in. So on Wednesday, when they do have the full pads on, and it is another 2 hours and 25 minutes, I want to see how he is used. Because the word that I wanted to emphasize when I asked my question to Spagnuolo was it appears that they're really experimenting with him. And they really are. I mean, can you want to go out there for nickel for a few snaps? I mean, just for giggles? I mean, this guy has played pretty much every position in camp. He's really good at blitzing. And so what's becoming clear to me is they about to light these quarterbacks up. Jared Goff better have his protection game on lock on opening night, because Drew Tranquil, really good at blitzing. Nick Bolton, when he runs for it, good things usually happen. You know, that's even when the ball has been snapped and he's obviously in his normal position. Willie Gay is an athletic freak, and I think he's going to come off the edge quite a bit, kind of like how he pressured Jalen Hurts in the second half of the Super Bowl. And Leo Chenault is, all I do is run forward. Coach, this is for Brendan Daly and for Steve Spagnuolo, per my eyes. This man never needs to be in a one-on-one ever again. Ever. Ever. You know, it's fascinating that there are, you know, experienced people of the industry in the NFL who are like, look, guys, the one-on-one is designed to set up timing, rhythm between the quarterback and the receiver. You try to guard any one of them dudes in one-on-one, and good luck to you, sir. So anytime a defensive player wins a one-on-one between, you know, safety and tight end like Justin Reed and Travis Kelce, or, you know, hey, Rashee Rice versus Trent McDuffie. Anytime the DB wins or performs pretty well, that's actually favorable for the person on defense, because the drill is to actually help the quarterback and the receiver get their rhythms down in terms of, you know, how they want to adjust to certain press coverages, how they want to build off certain routes or maybe tinker and change with them from time to time. I know Brendan Daly already knows this probably. Leo Chenault needs to be going forward at all times. I don't care if it's diagonal. I don't care if it's just a straight beeline. He don't need to be backing up. And he has improved his eyes, and you can tell he starts to trust himself more in zone coverage. But again, Leo Chenault is not built to cover a tight end one-on-one in man coverage. He's not. That's why you hired Drew Tranquil. So I think they got four really good linebackers. And the best part for Spags is all four of them are viable options in terms of blitzing or giving the impression of a blitz that might open up something else from your scheme. But Tranquil's almost intercepted Patrick a couple times. And I think that's a very good sign because you can start to tell that he's seen where he fits into the scheme. And now it's just about, hey, how much can we experiment with Drew Tranquil between now and August 17th? And hopefully by the time we break camp, we can say, you're going to do these three to four things against the Detroit Lions. And guess what? They have no tape of this. And that is really going to benefit us because this is your first time in the system and you're a veteran who's really, really talented playing alongside, you know, three other linebackers who were excellent the last time we saw them on a football field, that being Super Bowl 57.
Okay, Seth, I don't want to alarm you. I'm going to ask you a question at the end of this, so just set your feet and get ready. First, I love the phrasing from you, Nate, on the experimentation with the linebackers because that makes me so much more excited to talk about and to try to unpack what they're doing as opposed to just like, yeah, Tranquil can back up any of these spots. It's because there's a little mad scientist that might be coming out of Spags this year a little more, which is great. But Seth, what do you take from that whole sort of linebacker picture where we've talked about your love of Willie Gay Jr. that occasionally seems unrequited by the Chiefs coaching staff, but maybe he's coming off the edge a little more. That's kind of fun. What Tranquil can do. Obviously you've, you know, said time and time again that Nick Bolton's bad at football and anyone who thinks he's good at football is an idiot.
Understand what this does to me, man. People do not, man, the Chris Jones bit, people understood this one. Man, people take that one seriously. But please, please go on.
I'm just gonna go ahead and add in. I think the local school aspect of this is tough. So don't do any bleep talking about Daniel Wise while he's filling in for Chris Jones. And FAU is gonna be a test for us. That's all. Hey, what are you gonna say, Nate?
Hey, real quick, Seth, Nick Bolton was in the Oval Office. Why are you disrespecting this man?
Did he? Man. I thought for sure I saw him score a touchdown in one of those big games.
Super Bowl.
Come on,
was it the
man.
Super Bowl?
You know, I have already ruined my Twitter experience for a day over this because someone asked, you know, whether or not he should have, or like if I would, like they didn't ask me specifically, but you know, it was the editorial you. Would you have awarded the MVP, Super Bowl MVP to Nick Bolton had he had that second one counted, right?
Yeah.
And
which
my answer,
which my father believes should have counted.
God, well, no, 100% should have counted. But like the thing that I'm, like to me, this is about a larger issue than one game. This has to do with how we watch football, and like the last 13 years of my life have been dedicated to going beyond two defensive touchdowns. What? And I'm like, Jalen Hurts just dropped the ball, man. Like, he did a nice play state discipline.
Bolton spooked him.
So easy. Somebody else should have picked up the ball and went and scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl then, I guess, Seth. I don't know.
I just, man, you know. And then, great. He was gap sound. He stayed with the quarterback. He made the correct play. But, like, Hurts dropping the ball was luck. And that ball, which Nate, what shape is that ball not?
That ball ain't round, I tell you that.
That ball ain't round, and it bounced right into his hands. That's awesome. And he was opportunistic, and he ran it in, and that's great. But let's say the ball had bounced to the right instead, and I think it was Karlaftis there, and Karlaftis ran it in. Does that mean Karlaftis should be considered?
Well, that's not what happened, though.
But luck, it's about value above replacement. And then the other play, L'Jarius Sneed forced that fumble. Like, where's the love for Sneed, who made an incredible play on the ball, knocks it loose, and it bounced right to Nick Bolton. Those two plays weren't even just two of his top five plays in the Super Bowl. But yet they're the plays people point to. And I had a really tough time on Twitter for like a 5-hour period where I was like, guys, it's just like, no, this is box score analysis. But then it's like, oh, you think Nick Bolton's like, no, I thought he actually played a really good game. And so I don't know.
One anyway, FR, one TD.
How about those analytics, Seth?
Well, when people tell me, well, I mean, two defensive touchdowns matters way more than anything Mahomes did, I'm like, no.
Whoa.
No, that's what you were saying. Whoa. It's about value above replacement. What did you do that another average NFL player in your spot could not have done? And that's where Bolton had a few plays like that in the Super Bowl. And we should talk about those, like on a late third down coverage play. Like he had some really good run stops. Like he did some really good things that were better than those plays. Anyway, I think you asked me about the linebacker room. God, thank
you. I just want to know what you thought about Tranquil and everything Nate said.
It's so easy to manipulate. It's depressing. I'm 38 years old and I'm out here just like wind him up and watch him. And anyway, so I was the cymbals monkey. I don't know why I made that sound. So
that thing's scary, man. I wouldn't gaslight the cymbals monkey.
No, that thing is terrifying. So here's the thing with the linebacker group. Drew, this was always going to happen with Drew Tranquil. And I will just say this. I think if it were me, when I look at skill sets, the person that I think should lose a few more snaps to Drew Tranquil is Bolton. The biggest reason for that is they used Bolton as their dime and primary nickel guy. And it makes sense for Tranquil to take all those snaps and maybe all those box safety snaps too. Like you could see Drew Tranquil on the field if you look at how the Chiefs lined up last year with plenty of three safety sets, right? And then lined up Bolton as the primary dime guy. I could see a world where Tranquil's on the field like 75% of the time. And I think that would make sense. Instead, what I fear is it's going to like, well, you know, we should give him Willie Gay Jr. snaps. And that doesn't make sense to me. And so I'm still afraid of that. But I'm really excited. These are good problems to have, right? Yeah. Where you've got multiple guys that are talented that can do a variety of things. And my hope is that this leads to them finding some creative three linebacker sets that aren't just, you know, your base. And so I'm excited to see that because I think that keeps them talented and with Tranquil skill set can keep them still strong defending the middle of the field while being strong against the run. And that's the hard thing to do in today's NFL, right? Everyone's trying to, you know, prevent the big play and we're playing two safeties deep. So teams are saying, well, we're going to spam you underneath and in the middle of the field and we're going to run the ball now. Well, if you've got a linebacker group that can get it done, and the defensive line obviously needs to do some work there too. That's a big deal. So I underrated signing. It's flown under the radar, but Spags was always, always going to fall in love with this dude. Anyone that's watched Spags coach for the last few years and then watched Tranquil's tape was like, oh, Spags is going to love this guy. Like, and that's exactly what's happening.
So thinking out loud, this is the first time that I've fully kind of processed the linebacker situation this way. So either of you can tell me if you think I'm a genius or stupid for it. But for all of the talk we've had that's based in some like vibes and some observations where you go like, yeah, Spags just doesn't really trust Willie Gay to be where he's supposed to be or to help set up other guys or whatever that aspect of it is, that there's not the same amount of trust there that there is between Spags and Nick Bolton, right? That seems somewhat evident.
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
And Leo Chanel, rookie last year, we'll see where he fits into that. But if Steve Spagnuolo does trust Drew Tranquil in a similar way as a, you know, just a fast processor or knowing what he's supposed to do and the jobs of everyone around him, whatever the details of that are, and you guys might have more details you throw at it, but whatever the details of that are, if he trusts Tranquil that way in a way he didn't trust Willie Gay, Maybe Spags even would be willing to see his depth chart grow three sizes a la the Grinch and say, you know what? Nick Bolton doesn't have to be out there for every godforsaken snap of this defense because Drew can go out there, keep everything running on time, and be a little more be a little more versatile in what you might see in a sub package, in a passing situation, or whatever you're trying to show that defense. And maybe, now I'm getting full into wishful thinking. This one I don't even believe is true. Maybe if you trust Tranquil that way, it can be him and Willie Gay out there in some sub packages, which I would love to see. But maybe Spags doesn't want to put Willie Gay and, you know, Leo Chanel out there to do it on their own. I'm throwing linebacker takes at the wall here. Does that move you, either of you, at all?
No, it definitely moves me, and I want to make it clear to people that what Nick Bolton did last year was carry the weight of the entire defense on his shoulders, not named Chris Jones. Chris Jones played the most snaps on the defensive line. Nick Bolton was basically on the field all the time because you could argue they didn't have a backup middle linebacker last season. And so for him and Willie Gay, once Willie came back from his suspension, both of them not really having any major injuries kept the defense in a position to where it could improve over the course of the season. So, you know, as I said before, they have three leaders. They're all on each level of the defense. Chris Jones is not here. We've given all the reasons why. Justin Reed has been wanting to tell everybody, if you're on his Twitter account, that he is going to be great this year, because this is the first time in his 5-year career, going on to his, you know, sixth season, that hold on, kids, check these notes. Oh boy.
I'm not even sure what you're digging for.
Yeah, I just want to be factually accurate. You know, yeah, sixth season. this will be the first year that he's had the same defensive coordinator for consecutive seasons,
which is crazy.
Same defensive scheme for consecutive seasons. So your leader should grow in that capacity. And then, yeah, Nick Bolton is your all-time franchise leader in tackles for a single season. But he shouldn't have to do that this season, while still growing as a player himself, because you have Drew Tranquil, who can play middle linebacker from time to time and can be available to you on dime or nickel situations based on, you know, what the third down sort of look like. But yeah, I can see why Drew Tranquil might be the most underrated signing they've had this offseason that could equate to winning this year.
I'll also just go ahead and we'll reverse engineer it once again here, Seth, to say that if people want to read your thoughts on the wide receiver group right now, they can do that. Chief in the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. I know you got to get out of here, and we all got to get out of here. We've done a full podcast. Good job, everybody. But if you want to kind of go guy by guy through the depth chart and see where Seth's at right now, you can check that out, plus some clips from training camp up in there. And then I'm just going to go ahead and guess that we will have reason to talk about the receivers the next time we do an episode of Time's Ours. So we will most certainly talk about the pass catchers and how they shape up. Also, you know, diabetic King Noah Gray just feels, you know, bad pancreas, no problem, career year. But other than that, we can, you know, talk about that more coming up later on in the cycle for training camp. Nate, do you know, you said you're going to write about Tranquil later in the week, anything on the way on theathletic.com in the next 6 days or so?
Maybe something on Justin Ross. Just maybe.
I'm starting to believe.
Woo! Me too, baby.
We'll see what happens. Preseason games are a good indicator, but the pads came on. That's actually one of the things I'm gonna write about. The pads came on, and man, the Ross and Rice in particular, but also Sky Moore, like, their names didn't stop popping up once the pads came on, and that's a good thing. Now we'll see. There's no way he was right about all three of them. There's no way. There's just no way. But what if he was? Like, can you imagine the wailing and gnashing of teeth across the entire NFL if Brett Veach got it right on even two of those three guys.
So you're saying there's a chance?
There's no way he's right on all three.
Choo-choo, mother bleeper! Justin Ross hype train leaving the station. Let's go, get on! No more time to drag your feet. You're either on now or you're off now, Seth. We're on. We're leaving the station.
Can I finish the article first? I'm writing about, it's my one of my favorite yearly articles. And now I've been doing the Chief of the North long enough that I can like link back to the last two.
Yeah.
I'm writing real or fantasy. I almost called it What's Your Fantasy? And I was I just could not bring myself to do that.
What's your fantasy?
Not quite that secular.
Not quite that secular. I also just so happened to.
Is that what you asked someone of interest at the bar?
Yeah. No, I just so happened to hear that.
I've been starting conversations with what do you think about Justin Ross?
I genuinely don't know where I heard that song. That song was not appropriate for the radio. Just throwing that out there. I suppose, Josh, this would have been before your time.
But. Yeah, I almost made a joke about, like, what is radio? And then I realized I can't make that joke. So I'm going to say, what's music on the radio?
Yeah, there was a time where just man. You punched in that dial and you hoped for the best. And that wasn't the same song that they played eight times last hour. Or, depending on what, you know, what song it was, you were pretty psyched to hear that song for the eighth time in an hour. Nate, you remember when was it the Eminem show when the Real Slim Shady, was it that one? That was on, was that on the Marshall Mathers LP or the Eminem show? Either way, I worked outside that summer. Do you remember, was there ever anyone that wasn't listening to that song as they drove by you? Because that was my life.
Yeah,
like
that and Oops, I Did It Again.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. Which, by the way, holds up if you listen to it. You're like, you know
what? It does.
Well, I'm just saying, it holds up.
I mean, I'm with you. I think it's a good take.
I mean, they have to slap her, though. I mean, she just wanted to say
hello. Yeah, what was that, man?
She just wanted to say what's up to my... Hey, man, you looking real tall. I just want you to have a successful NBA career. My God, look how tall he is. Why you gotta slap her like that, dog?
I forgot about
why,
that.
Why you gotta do that to her? People. Why you gotta do that to her?
Especially if they're wearing helmets, to bring it full circle.
Oh! all right, let's end it with this. Josh?
Let's just end it, please. No. Official ruling, you have until the end of the film review, but I'm going to need the decision from you. Maybe before you hit publish. That might be the last call for anyone to be on or off the bandwagon. That's my rule.
For all three of the young receivers or Justin Ross specifically?
Justin Ross specifically.
Oh, can I wait for one preseason game?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely
you're either
not.
In or you're out.
Like, have the courage of your convictions here a little bit. You don't need to see him play real football. We got training camp with pads. That was honestly too far. End this show, please, Nate.
All right, Josh. This is our annual little game show that we do.
Oh boy, okay.
On Saturday, it rained, which means and lightning. Hope everybody stays safe. Which means on Saturday they had to move to indoors. Which unfortunately Najee Johnson tore his ACL. His season is over. It was
also John Ross retired, by the way. That's just a different transactional thing.
But anyway, as I've told everybody for multiple years, when the Chiefs go inside during training camp, that's when the real, real practices start. Which means I can't give you information other than audible sounds. Josh, oh boy. You give
me... We changed our Zoom settings before this show. I don't know if it's going to work or not.
Josh, you say the name, I'm going to give a sound. You. Anybody on the roster that you think might be close, you want to know a little bit about, where he is on the depth chart, you will find the answers through these sounds for just a few more minutes.
All right. Josh, do you want to do three and I do three?
I think let's just go back and forth.
Okay, you start.
Rashee Rice.
It definitely didn't work.
No.
But I don't think
that will work until the next Zoom.
And
yeah,
I'm
me
excited.
Too.
Yep. I'll go a different route. Charles Omenihu. It's the kombucha lady right now.
A cornerback not named Watson, Williams, McDuffie, or Sneed. Or Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
I narrowed us down there, Seth. I don't know if you want to work together to figure out who it is or if we just let that go there. But
yeah, I don't want to get Nate in trouble. I'm trying to think who that would be.
I think it's Nick Jones or Echo.
Oh, Blair. Yeah, I've heard. Okay, you know what? Fine. I had one in mind, but I'm gonna do some teamwork here. Nick Jones. Man, how does Beach keep doing this? Can I go again?
Please. Yeah, please.
Jawan Taylor.
That was me. Sorry, that was me, everybody. Nate, you're right. That was my reaction to Seth picking Jawan Taylor.
I'm sorry, you said Jawan Taylor?
Yes, sir.
I got one. Do I have one left here? Yeah, it's my last one. I've been saving my last bullet in the chamber. Nate?
Mm-hmm.
Justin Ross. I don't know if Nate made a sound or not.
I know he did because I saw the yellow things.
Oh, I don't have the window open.
I cannot wait to listen back to the podcast.
Oh, we've just created an Easter egg for ourselves that every other person listening to this knows what the answer was, but we don't.
I know. All right, I'm going to do my last one.
Choo-choo is where we're
going. All right, well then, we've already done Rice and Ross.
Yep.
I feel, man, I just really want to know. I'm torn between a rookie with something or a second year player with something to prove and a majestic white horse.
I mean, there are audible noises that I can't make to the adjustments. I mean, the majestic white horse can produce sounds that don't need to be made.
I'll stick with that. I just know. We're like eight noises from a not suitable for work podcast.
Yes!
This is going to be a podcast that I would start listening to, but I would turn off because of my moral convictions.
What was the Stephen A. noise?
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.